Love Australian history brought to life through powerful storytelling? Then you must discover the works of Stephen Whiteside, doctor by day, poet and storyteller by passion. A seasoned writer and lifelong adventurer of the Australian High Country, Stephen masterfully blends fact with feeling in his historical narrative nonfiction. His novella Snow, Fire and Gold tells the remarkable true story of Bill Spargo and Evelyn Piper, pioneers whose lives unfolded amidst the isolation and beauty of Australia's alpine wilderness. Now, his latest release, Peril Bradshaw, Princess of Hotham, shines a spotlight on another captivating figure from the mountain's past, rich with heritage, heart, and an unforgettable sense of place. With a poet's touch and a historian's eye, Stephen's books offer an intimate window into Australia's untold stories. Perfect for lovers of history, nature, and real-life resilience. Grab your copy today and adventure into the soul of the Australian High Country. Hello, authors. I'm Joanne Morrell, children's and young adult fiction writer and author of Short Nonfiction for Authors. Thanks for joining me for the Hybrid Author Podcast, sharing interviews from industry professionals to help you forge a career as a hybrid author, both independently and traditionally publishing your books. You can get the show notes for each episode and sign up for your free author pass over at the Hybrid Author website to discover your writing process, get tips on how to publish productively, and get comfortable promoting your books at www.hybridauthor.com.au. Let's crack on with the episode. Hello, authors. I hope you're all keeping well in whatever part of the world you reside and listen to the podcast in. Today's interview is with D.G. Rampton on Reigning in Regency, crafting timeless romance and thriving as a hybrid author. And we chat balancing historical accuracy with imaginative freedom to create compelling love stories that resonate with modern readers, the Regency romance niche, hybrid authorship, effective strategies in growing and maintaining readership, the challenges of marketing and self-promotion in such a competitive space, D.G. Rampton's advice for aspiring romance authors, particularly those looking to break into historical subgenres like Regency, and much more. So on my author adventure this week, I have been busy, still school holidays, podcast recordings coming up next week, various bits and pieces happening, but mostly not too snowed under, which has been nice. I have actually started getting back into the more bookseller hat, if you want to call it that. And yeah, that felt really good. I had a librarian reach out to ask me about my books, wanting to purchase some, and then went through and filled out their form, letting them know it's good that they support local authors. And it just snowballed into various ideas. Like, I can see myself, you try not to think of the avalanche of jobs that you need to do as part of a publishing book marketing business, but I start one thing and then it feels like it snowballs off into another, you know. So it's kind of like you answer a query to an email which is about, say, a podcast guest, and you want to provide them with your advertising opportunities brochure, but then realize that needs updating, and so you go off to update that, and then it's kind of like you get pulled into all different directions. I'm not sure if anybody else experiences that, but I certainly have today. But I'm really excited about the caliber of guests and topics that are coming up. Everything's ticking over nicely, so that's good. Just starting to prepare for, you know, I just sort of mentioned it was school holidays in the previous episode, and now it's like back to school next week, which is crazy. These holidays have come up fast, yet they've gone fast. Easter has been lovely, celebrating with family and taking a break and just reading. I've been reading a fair whack. If you listened to, I think it was last episode, I was talking about getting out to the backlot cinemas and watching the books to film events and visiting Mainly Books, which is a secondhand bookstore in Perth. I had stocked up on a fair few reads then, so I have started reading those, which is real nice. May is approaching the end of next week, which is absolutely insane. I am 40 next month, the big 4-0. And I honestly don't feel feel it. And I don't know if that's a key for staying younger, and I'm not sure why. I don't feel it. I still feel like early 20s, a bit silly, a bit like I know nothing, a bit lost in life and all the rest. But yeah, got a few things planned, which I'll chat about later on, coming up closer to that. Again, it's looking back, thinking, not thinking where's the time gone, because it's been very busy this year, but just how fast time goes. And as the show, you know, sort of stands for, life is too short to wait. So if you're floundering around out there waiting to get started on a project or putting yourself out there in any way, start now. To hell with any sort of doubts or any kind of feeling it has, things have to be a certain way. Just get yourself out there. And I'm still plodding along with the women's fiction adaptation to the TV series. I sort of not tried to find a shortcut, but in my head, I'm just sort of like, you know, how easy would it be just to upload my book and have it formatted into a screenplay, and looked at whether there was any kind of AI tools out there that would do that for me. But I don't want to upload my book and for them to change it into a screenplay. I don't want them to have any mark on the creativity or the content at all. It was simply just for formatting, but there's really not anything. There's all the usual tools, the writing tools, but you've pretty much got to edit as you go. So I'm working through the book, taking the bits that will fit a screenplay and leaving the bits that are novel. Anything that you can't see, thoughts and feelings, do not make it into a screenplay unless you have a narrator. It's got to be all visual, which is really interesting. I'm looking forward to getting that down on paper and then being able to go through and seeing how that can be made better. But on the front, it's just been quite quiet, actually. Like,
yeah,
moseying on, plodding along. So this episode's sponsor is Sanguine Press, my imprint of feel-good, fast-paced, emotionally charged women's contemporary fiction. The writer, the hairdresser, and the nurse intertwines the struggles and dynamics of three women's working, family, and romantic relationships, leaning on their lifelong friendship to help get them through. And my short nonfiction for authors, Author Fears and How to Overcome Them. How many times have you said your writing's crap or shied away from calling yourself an author? Take comfort in knowing your author fears are valid. Other writers feel the same way you do, but are not letting fear stop them from putting themselves out there. We're all feeling fear, but doing what we love anyway, and you can too. Starting a freelance writing business? Place yourself in the pro position before you've met with your first client. Invest 1 hour gaining 60 plus quick tips to save yourself time, money, and stress discovering the little but important factors previously unconsidered, having never worked directly with clients before. Books come in ebook, print, and some audio, and range between $10, $15, and $28 each. Now on with the episode!
Best-selling author D.G. Rampton loves to create feel-good romantic comedy featuring intelligent heroines, dashing men, and sparkling banter. An engineer by training, but a romantic by nature, she left her corporate career to follow the call of her artistic inclinations and write stories that bring joy and laughter into people's lives. D.G. Rampton lives in Sydney with her Mr. Darcy, their cheeky teenager and emotionally needy fur baby, and is currently working on a new historical romantic comedy series. Welcome to the Hybrid Author Podcast, Diana.
Oh, thank you, Jo. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, we're absolutely thrilled to have you. We're just going to jump straight in if you can tell us how you came to be a writer.
Okay, well, this is a bit of a long story, but I used to work in the corporate world in property, and I had an engineering background. I always, always loved writing and Jane Austen. And I started as a hobby, really, in my 20s. And then by the time I had my daughter, I couldn't do the hours required in the corporate world. So I thought, finally, time to do my book. So I sat down, and 10 years later, the first book was ready.
Oh, wow.
It was a very long process for me.
Well, you were juggling a baby.
I was, but that's no excuse.
That's right.
10 years, anyway. I never seriously considered myself as an author because I'd had this previous identity. So I guess I never took myself seriously in that way. It took me a while to grow into the role and to believe in myself. And that's finally when that happened, I managed to get out my first three books.
Amazing. Yeah, it is difficult though, isn't it? If you've not done this before, much like yourself, I've felt the same imposter syndrome, but you do, it is a mindset to own those titles. You know, I am a writer, I am an author, if you haven't done it before, because it is such a personal experience that you're putting yourself out there and your thoughts, beliefs, imagination, like the whole part and parcel.
I think it's scary the first time my book came up. You're putting all of yourself into these stories, laying yourself bare for judgment.
That judgment.
Christification or, you know,
Exactly. And I'd had a few knockbacks early on in my writing, the first book, the writing process. The book hadn't been finished, but I thought I'd submit some chapters to the publishing industry. And I did get knockbacks, and most were quite harsh. There was one lovely gentleman who basically said, I hadn't yet found my voice, which is a really lovely way of putting it, because it sort of inspired you to do better. It wasn't a definite no. It took a while, but I got there.
It would be nice if publishers could, even though, you know, rejection letters sounds like you had some harsh ones, but they sometimes come across pretty standard. But if they could offer a bit of inspiration, or we like this or that, but I suppose they get hit with so much, they just probably don't have the time.
I empathize. And I think there were a lot of standard ones, but I do remember one where the lady was like, I was so looking forward to reading this because I like Jane Austen and Georgette Heyer. And I was so disappointed that you wasted my time.
Oh, no. And you're like, well, look at me now.
Oh, but that's the thing, right? You learn and you grow and you get better. So I think the main thing for new writers is to realize, just because you're rejected to begin with, doesn't mean your journey ends. You have years ahead of you to get better.
That's it. Yeah, no, well said. Your Regency romance novels transport readers into a world of elegance, wit, and passion. How do you balance historical accuracy? Because I know that some people struggle with that, you know, with imaginative freedom to create compelling love stories that resonate with modern readers today.
It is a juggling act. I love that particular period of time, the whole Regency period. There's a lot of refinement and eloquence, manners to do at that time that really resonate with me. So I find it quite easy to write in that time. However, I have a more modern take on relationships and women's roles in society. And so it is a little bit of a juggling act. I do tend to write about the ton, like the high society, if you like. They used to call it the ton after a French word. But in those particular circles, elevated circles, women's rights were better in some ways. So I did have a bit of leeway. I can definitely write my stories and don't feel like I'm completely off into like fantasy land. So I don't know about writing it in the lower tiers of society. I don't know, but I do think generally I've got my rose tinted glasses on when I do writing that period, because there are a lot of bad things that happened health wise. You know, mortality rates are massively high, and children's rights, animal rights, women's rights, none of that really existed yet. It's a really interesting period. My latest book that I'm about to finish writing is set in 1824. And it just so happened that the RSPCA started in 1824 in London.
Oh, wow.
My heroine, who I didn't realize about the RSPCA, but my heroine is a great lover of animals. Because she's a duchess, she has the funds to have this menagerie on her country estate with full of animals. And so I was able to work that into my story. Look, you have to take the period that you write in and make it your own. No other way around it. Right, enjoy the process.
Yeah, no, it sounds amazing. I would imagine a love story in any period, love is love, really.
Like the universal human themes, love and humor as well. I also try to inject humor into my stories because I want to give people a lighthearted, fun read that will give them some positive energy.
Yes.
I try to write about universal themes. So again, it doesn't matter where you start, people can relate.
Yeah, that's it. Has your, obviously everybody loves like the Bridgerton series and things like that, is your work kind of exploded more because of that series? Has the genre gotten really popular because of that series?
There has definitely been an explosion, but I think it's more an explosion of awareness because people have always loved historical romance. And because of Jane Austen, they've always liked this period, but maybe they wouldn't talk about it or they're a bit shy about it. I don't actually write sex scenes, but a lot of this genre is quite sexy. Maybe people haven't wanted to talk about that particular passion of theirs. So they would not talk about the books they've read, or maybe the reading on the train, they would hide the covers. But with Kindle, of course, it's much easier. So the romance genre has always been massive in this sector. But I think now people are more aware of it and can talk about it.
Yeah. So was it a love, obviously, from, like you said, Jane Austen and things that initially drew you to you know, the Regency subgenre and stuff, and you wrote it? And yeah, what do you think keeps readers continually captivated by this period? Is it the love stories, the high society, the underhandedness, or a specific aspect?
Similar to me, they like the manners and the romance, the period. People had very defined roles. In our society today, we've lost a lot of that. And some of it's been good, but some of it's been bad. Perhaps we could take the good bits from the past and incorporate them more into our everyday lives. I definitely think manners, romance, and the high society aspect of it. There's a whole genre called billionaire romance, where the men are highly successful, wealthy billionaires. It's extremely popular, and it's similar to the period I write in, because I write about the billionaires of the Regency period. It makes life more pleasurable to think of these beautiful scenes that can be created because you have wealth.
Yeah. For me, I like them. But I think I like them from afar. If I was living it and I had to go through the rigmarole of putting on what they have to wear, then I probably would feel a bit different. But it's so fancy, you know, it's detailed and fancy, and yeah, I like it.
Beautiful. Actually, a beautiful needlework. I actually was doing some posts on my Instagram recently, zoomed into the detail of a particular dress from the period. It's just exquisite. These tiny little stitches, beautiful detailing with silk, lace, and pearls. One of the dresses had pearls on it. And I'm sure if we went to Paris Fashion Week, we would see that. But in our everyday lives, we don't get to see that anymore.
Yeah, that's amazing. One of the things as well, like for Regency romance, and I guess with Bridgerton, I think it's kind of, it's probably opened up to a lot of people who don't read it and didn't know that they liked it. And now, you know, a whole load of readers coming across to your genre from that sort of series, I suppose.
I hope so. I think it's definitely a growing genre, but it has always been big.
Yeah. Well, as a successful hybrid author, what strategies have you found most effective in growing and maintaining your readership? So as we spoke about before, you started out with some rejections and now you've got, you know, big readership, a lot of books. You know, how have you grown that? Is it just through each book?
Oh, gosh. I wish I had a plan I could just share with you. I muddled my way through. And it's changed. It's evolved as technology has changed. In the beginning, because I was starting from ground zero, I reached out to some local magazines. I used to live in Richmond in England.
Oh, yeah.
The Richmond magazine picked it up and did a review of my first book, Artemisia. I had an opening at a local bookstore, a little book launch, invited everyone I knew, spread the word. I went on a lot of social media group chats. So Facebook, Instagram. I think it was called Library Thing. I haven't used that in years, but I think it was something called Library Thing. You just have to look it up. Type in. Well, any authors out there, just type in, do a Google search of what is out there.
Yeah.
You need to get onto social media, unfortunately. I don't love it. Mm. It's okay. And I have some really lovely followers now that we have a bit of banter with. But in the beginning, it's a bit of a slog to get your name out there because I didn't have money for marketing. So it wasn't really until about book two or three that I thought I better put some marketing budget into this new career of mine. So, and really that's when things started to work in terms of sales. Before that, it was purely word of mouth and it was pointless. I wasn't getting anywhere. But as soon as I started putting marketing budget down, things just looked up immediately. So I started with Facebook. I know they've changed the algorithm since, so it might not be as effective. It then went on to Amazon marketing because that is a very direct link between marketing budget and sales, and you can easily. That's what I use predominantly now. If I have a book deal going on, for example, like 99 cents or free, then I go on something called BookBub, which you probably heard of. I offer my book there. BookBub's really interesting. You can pay for ads as much as you want. You can do $2 a day and they will deliver your book to however many people from their distribution list around the world. Advan America works best for me and the UK, but everyone's different depending on their genre. The best thing I've found is if I have a free book offer, I submit to be chosen for their special deal. And you have to be chosen for this and you pay like three, four, $500 for it. And then you get distributed. Like it's completely different. Like you get so many downloads from that. It's incredible. And I know giving your book away for free sounds a bit crazy, but I've got a series. So it makes sense for me. Like I do one of the books and it's not a continuous series. So you can read them in any order. Do one of the books for free. And like I've had 20,000 people download it, for example.
Yeah.
Then you're guaranteed a certain amount. It's actually a lot less than 20,000 for the second and third book, but it might be, you know, 2,000 or 3,000, which is still amazing. So, yeah.
And also I'm sorry to cut you off, but even if people don't, there's not a sort of read through from that. They might even word of mouth again, go on and tell other people and then they, you know, be the ones that to come and do it. So yeah.
Exactly. And I find that it's not enough just to do it once and then you think, okay, now I've started a bit of a chain reaction and now just let it go and stand back. But you have to keep doing marketing.
How much time do you put into your marketing, would you say?
Not enough, but I would say probably 30% of my time when I'm writing a book. If I'm not writing a book, then yeah, obviously 100%. But
and how did you, is this all like self-taught, self-education? How did you learn what you were going to apply your budget to? And then effectively, I suppose a budget's a budget. You know what you've got to spend and whatnot. But you obviously worked something out that was good for you. How did you work out what would work best for you, I guess?
It was trial and error. Unfortunately, yeah. There's no way to get around it. So while you're doing your trial and error, you will mess up and you will lose budget making wrong decisions. But it's part of the learning process. You can't get away from it. You just have to be willing, like whatever marketing budget you put aside, you should be able to afford it. Like don't expect to get that money, but you can build on it. So initially you might start off with $2 a day or $5 a day, but eventually you might be up to $40 a day, depending on how well your marketing campaign's going. At any one time on Amazon marketing, I probably have about 6 or 7 campaigns going globally.
Yep.
Regions. I don't know if you're on Amazon marketing, but their software is getting better. So you can now on the one page track all the different countries, whereas you couldn't do that before. So looking country to country, it's a nightmare.
Oh, it sounds a bit much. Yeah, haven't ventured out into that, but it is something I'm going to do. And it scares me a little bit. It's very time consuming. So then you feel like you want to make sure you're doing it effectively. And then I guess if you're doing Amazon and say, do you do Amazon and Facebook at the same time? So you're effectively across two, is that a lot? Or is it's they've made the platforms have made it easy enough for you, like you say, now that you can track it better.
You can definitely, Amazon is quite easy. So that's a no-brainer. I would start Amazon because the US market is the biggest. If you had limited budget, I would focus on the US. It really is a no-brainer. Facebook, I have a love and hate relationship with. Like, it worked really well for me in the past. Cannot get the current algorithm to work for me, but I'm determined to give it another go. I want to crack this up.
Yeah.
Time when I finish this book and I have a month or two rest, I might have another go at it. Okay. Because it's also very powerful. You don't have the link to direct sales. Like you can't immediately see that you've got a sale from click on Facebook, but your profile is getting raised and inevitably your social media presence grows and people start interacting with your posts more. And yeah, I think it's for overall discoverability, for people to remember you, perhaps Facebook is really good. In terms of direct sales, then definitely Amazon.
I don't know what I do wrong on Facebook. I've run Instagram ads and things like that, and that's all been great and it sticks to budget. But I've always found with Facebook, I don't know if there's something I'm not ticking or pushing, but it tends, whatever I think I've put in as a budget, it like is triple by the end. I'm just like,
what? Oh, really?
It's never right. So I've not done too good there. But you, like you said, just trial and error yourself.
It is trial and error, but both Facebook and Amazon and BookBub have little videos or just articles that you can read to understand. Right. I've also gone on forums that talk about this thing. I've actually picked up a lot of good ideas just from reading other people's experiences. Mm. I didn't know about it or Goodreads when I first started off. So it's just stuff I've discovered by reading.
Yeah, I've heard of BookBub, but I haven't actually ever ventured over to the platform to check out what it is. They talk about running ads all the time, like in the self-publishing sphere. It's on my radar as well as a lot of other names, but I haven't actually gone out and had a look like, yeah, okay, it's time. Go and check it out.
If you have a deal, they like a deal on BookBub.
If you're offering something cheaper or first in series.
Cheaper or free?
Is there any other sort of tips, marketing tips you want to offer up that are glaring that you didn't know in the beginning that you were like, I'd send you down a rabbit hole, but no.
Well, look, a lot of tools out there that I wish I had in the beginning have developed since I started. So there's more stuff available to us. But the Australian company Canva does my ads, the imagery for my ads. It does my posts when I want something a bit nicer. Yeah. They also now do videos. Amazon Marketing has started allowing you to post videos as part of the ads.
Yep.
And actually, at the moment, I'm getting a better return on my video ads than I am on my normal ads. I'm sort of just starting out into that sphere, discovering
that works.
But I can't do it without Canva. I highly recommend Canva.
Have you tried any of the AI tools yet for marketing stuff, like making videos or anything?
Yes, it has got the AI on there. It has come up with certain imagery I've tried to use in my marketing campaigns. It's definitely worth exploring. I think AI is the way of the future.
Definitely for faster processes. I've been finding in the last few days using it for certain admin tools and certain things, and I was blown away. Something that would have taken me probably manually, or just like would feel about 3 days in between everything else, and I think I got it done in about 3 hours, and I was like, oh my gosh. There's more like admin side of stuff, just asking it questions and things. And I was like, oh yeah.
I haven't explored that whole ChatGPT side yet.
It is worth it.
My daughter has it, so I have to.
I'm just in the process of sort of learning about it, like seeing what it can do and things like that, and asking some questions and prompts about how I can use it to aid my business, especially in a faster manner as well.
It's really boring having to do your marketing research and learning all about these new technologies, but as a self-published author, couldn't do what I do without it. When you're starting out, at least 50% of your time should be on marketing. Ideally, your book's finished, your first book is finished, because it's really hard to concentrate while you're writing on other things. But once your first book is finished, then you need to dedicate a chunk of time just figuring out what technology works for you and where you can do your ads.
Yeah, definitely what you said there. Finish the book first and then make your move into marketing, because I think a lot of people, it's very hard to define where your time is best spent, and you can get caught up in the marketing. But if your book's not finished, then that'll keep you from that. Do you have any advice for aspiring romance authors, particularly those who want to break into, you know, the areas that you write, like historical subgenres like Regency and things like that?
I would really get onto these Facebook groups, for example, about the genre, like the Jane Austen book club or something in your particular genre. It doesn't matter what the genre is. It could be fantasy. You need to find your tribe and start interacting with them. And it's not enough just to be posting ads to these people. You need to interact with their posts, with other authors' posts. You're building a community around yourself. And that's not like all your readership, but you need a core small community around you that will give you your first reviews. And that has an emotional tie with you. And so they will maybe provide feedback, but it will be in a nice way. It's about building relationships, as with anything. If you have a strong core group of about 10 followers that have your back, I'd say minimum 10, then from there, it gets easier to grow. Just need to find those 10 and and build that community.
Well, thank you so much for your time and expertise, Diana. It's been wonderful. Can you tell our listeners, you know, where can they discover all your series and everything you do on and offline?
Oh, thank you for asking. I am selling only through Amazon at the moment. I do ebooks as well as hard copies on Amazon, but I only do Amazon because I can do Kindle Unlimited. And once I can sign up to Kindle Unlimited, I get all these marketing opportunities, which are just so much better. So I had to say goodbye to my other distributors and just focus on Amazon for the time being.
Fair enough. That's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, having your focus in one place. I think, yes. Yeah, that's good.
It's easier.
Do you think in the future, will you go direct, or do you think you'll go somewhere else in the future? Or
I think Kindle Unlimited at the moment is about 70% of my sales. So I would try, you know, maybe with this new book, I put it on Kindle Unlimited to begin with and just see how it goes. I think it just has to be a mishmash at this point. I really don't know if I can survive in other forms if I have to let go of Kindle Unlimited.
Yeah.
But interestingly, you can have paper books on other platforms.
Hmm.
So Barnes & Noble, for example, that's another avenue I need to start exploring in terms of physical books. But again, you just need the time. And I haven't got time at the moment.
That's it, isn't it? Congratulations on all your success so far. It sounds like you're doing amazing and the books look fantastic. Yeah. Thanks again.
Thank you, Jo. So lovely chatting.
Have it, folks. The truly riveting and romantic DG Rampton. If you haven't already, get yourself over and check out Diana's books. They're absolutely superb. Next time on the Harvard Author Podcast, we have Sandy Parsons on self-publishing children's fiction overseas. Sandy Parsons lives and breathes stories as a reader, writer, and storyteller. Sandy's creative nonfiction has been published in Mindfood, Frankie, Chicken Soup, and Growing Up Disabled in Australia anthology. She currently lives in Western Australia with her favourite husband, some problem puppies, and many teetering stacks of books. Fabulous interview with Sandy coming up next week. But for now, I wish you well in your author adventure. That's it from me. Bye for now.
That's the end for now, authors. I hope you are further forward in your author adventure after listening, and I hope you'll listen next time. Remember to head on over to the Hybrid Author website at www.hybridauthor.com.au to get your free author pass. It's bye for now.